Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I will be reading San Angelo News, the first story, the only local story this week from the San Angelo Standard Times, and the rest of the hour filled out with articles read from the sanangelolive.com website. From the Standard Times, San Angelo rodeo tickets on sale this week. Be aware of scammers when buying, by Rosanna Frere, published March 6th. San Angelo stock show and rodeo tickets are on sale starting this week, and the organization is advising customers to be wary of scammers when purchasing tickets. Rodeo tickets went on sale Monday, March 3rd at 10 a.m. online and at the Foster Communications Coliseum box office, 50 East 43rd Street. Ticket prices vary in value depending on each performance, according to the association's website. Also, tickets are for each seat, so any person or child requiring a seat will be required to have a ticket. The rodeo runs from Friday, March 31st through April 15th. Children over the age of 4 must present a ticket to enter all ticketed areas. Please be on the lookout for scammers trying to sell fraudulent San Angelo stock show and rodeo tickets, the association said. Our tickets are affiliated with Sapphire Tickets only and may only be purchased by visiting www.sanangelorodeo.com or in person at the Foster Communications Coliseum box office. Now moving to sanangelolive.com. 26-year-old suspect arrested for inappropriately touching 9-year-old girl, by James Belligny, published March 8th. A 26-year-old San Angelo man who allegedly has an attraction to a 9-year-old girl has been arrested after the child told another adult about being sexually abused, according to court documents on March 7th, 2023, an investigator with the San Angelo Police Department was contacted by a patrol officer who advised a 9-year-old child victim had made an outcry that Brandon Jace Sessom, 26, had touched her inappropriately. The officer said an unidentified adult had confronted Sessom with this information, and Sessom allegedly stated he made out with the girl in June or July of 2021 while his newborn daughter was in the hospital. The officer also advised the investigator that Sessom had left his residence with a firearm and allegedly stating he was going to kill himself after he was confronted. The same day, investigators spoke with the outcry witness, who said the day before, March 6, 2023, she was sleeping with her 2-year-old daughter because she was having issues falling asleep, and Sessom was sleeping with the victim in Sessom's bed. The witness then said around midnight, the child victim allegedly came into the room she was sleeping in and told her she could no longer take it, and the victim said Sessom had touched her private area. When the witness confronted Sessom, he allegedly admitted to making out with the child in June or July 2021. Also, Sessom allegedly told the witness that the child enjoyed what he was doing and that he was attracted to the child. The alleged assault took place at a location inside the city of San Angelo. A forensic interview was conducted on March 7, 2023, with the child victim, where it was said that Sessom touched the child's private area with his hand in September 2021. The child stated she was scared and did not know what to do, so she never told anyone. The child also stated that several days ago, while she was asleep in the same bed as Sessom, he touched her again, and then again on the night of March 6, 2023. Sessom was arrested and charged with continuous sexual abuse of a child under the age of 14 on March 7, 2023. He was booked into the Tom Green County Detention Facility the same day and has a $150,000 bond. Our next few articles are going to be about the same crime, a murder that was committed back in 2021. Accused murderer pleads not guilty as jury seated in trial, by Yantis Green, published March 7th. Accused murderer Jose Trevino entered a plea of not guilty Monday after the jury was seated in his murder trial in the Tom Green County Courthouse. The 12 jurors and two alternates were chosen Monday on the first day of the trial. Defense attorney Ray Lesvestes and prosecutor John Best agreed on the 14 jurors in 51st District Court. As we reported earlier, Trevino is on trial for the brutal stomping death of Jason Garavay in 2021. According to court documents, on June 19, 2021, police responded to Shannon Hospital in regards to a possible stabbing victim. Investigators were contacted to the scene and learned the incident happened in the parking lot at 2400 College Hills Boulevard. After speaking with officers, the investigator learned that this was not a stabbing, but an assault by an unknown suspect. While on the scene, Garavay coded, which means he went into cardiopulmonary arrest, but was resuscitated. There were indications that Garavay went 10 minutes without oxygen to his brain. The investigators spoke with several witnesses, two of whom provided a description of the assault and the suspect. The witnesses told the investigator that Garavay was knocked to the ground and was stomped several times in the head and face area. This kind of attack would match the injuries seen on Garavay at the hospital. After the assault, the suspect left in a vehicle with another individual from the scene, and Garavay was taken to the hospital by another individual. Investigators spoke with another witness and reviewed surveillance footage from the area of the assault. Footage showed an escalating issue between Garavay and the suspect, which ended with both men in the parking lot. The footage also showed Garavay had no problem leaving, but being unable to walk after the assault. Due to the investigation, review of security footage, witness statements, and other factors, investigators positively identified Jose Trevino based on records from the Penny Tap House as well as physical description. Garavay passed away on June 27, 2021, and due to the nature of his assault and his death, a warrant was issued for Trevino. In the courtroom Monday, the indictment was read after the jury was seated and received initial instructions. Trevino entered a plea of not guilty. He has elected to have the jury assess punishment. Trevino is charged with one count of murder and one count of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury. He pleaded not guilty to both counts. Both the defense and prosecution read their opening statements. Following opening statements Monday, the jury was released until Tuesday morning at 8:30 a.m. when testimony will begin. Here's our next related article. Jury squirms at photos of blood-filled Corvette, by Matt Trammell, published March 7th. The Park 2400 murder trial continued on Tuesday morning with multiple San Angelo police officers taking the stand. The first officer, Parker Williams, took the stand at around 9 a.m. He was one of the first officers on scene the night outside the bar called the Penny Tap House in the Park 2400 shopping center. During his testimony, Williams told the jury how the scene was established, how the interaction with the bar staff was, along with other initial steps made in the investigation. At the time of the incident, Williams was still an officer in training. He and his supervisor were originally dispatched to Shannon for the report of a stabbing, but later went to the stabbing location, 2412 College Hills. There, the two spoke with bar staff. In a body cam video, the staff at the Penny Tap House said they were aware of a fight outside. The bouncer told the officers he initially walked the party out, but did not see a problem, so he went back inside. Moments later, a fight would break out in the parking lot, and Jason Garavay's blood would be spilled all over the inside of the Corvette. The second policeman, Tanner Tumlinson, was the investigating officer at Shannon Medical Center. He testified that as he arrived at the hospital, he met with a man identified as Garavay's brother, Roy Chavarria. Tumlinson told the jury that he told him two different stories about what happened. The first time, he told Tumlinson that the group was walking to their car and an unknown man grabbed Garraway from behind. Chariva claimed that by the time he got around to the other side of the car, it was too late. The second time he gave a statement to Tumlinson, Chariva told the officer that an unknown man ran up to the car. Garraway got out of the car and the fight took place. Both of those statements were shown to the jury via body cam footage. Photos of Garraway were then shown. The photos were taken by Tumlinson after Garraway was deceased. Injuries included two cuts to the head, one to the temple, and one to the back of the head, bloodied knuckles, and two massive contusions to both legs. In cross-examination by defense attorney Ray LaFest, Tumlinson told the jury that Garraway also had imprint of a car mat on his legs. This was likely caused during the same time the contusions occurred. That could imply that Chavarria's story isn't adding up. Chavarria has been subpoenaed so he could take the stand this week. The third officer was CSI Detective Ashley Lowe. At the time, she was in charge of photographing and documenting evidence from both the scene at Park 2400 and the scene at Shannon Hospital. The most intriguing part of her testimony came from when she inventoried the vehicle that was used to take Garraway to the hospital. Photos shown to the jury that were taken by Lowe depicted a Chevy Corvette filled with blood. There was a massive amount of blood in the passenger seat floorboard, and on the outside of the car. All of this was sent off to a lab for testing. After Lowe's testimony, the court took a break. We will continue to update the hearing as the trial goes on. Our next article related to this crime. Medical examiner says victim's BAC was four times the legal limit, by Matt Trammell, published March 7th. Shocking details were revealed by a medical examiner on Tuesday during the murder trial of Jose Trevino, confirmed that Jason Garraway's blood alcohol level was four times the legal limit. As we have reported all week, the Park 2400 murder trial is currently underway in Tom Green County. Earlier today, we heard from three San Angelo police officers who worked the case. Following lunch, Dr. Luisa Flores, a medical examiner with the forensic pathologist at South Plains Forensic Pathology, took the stand. During her conversation to the court, prior to the jury entering, Dr. Flores went through the autopsy report from Jason Garraway. In a report, she claimed that Garraway died from cerebral hypoxia caused by blunt force trauma. Cerebral hypoxia is caused when oxygen does not get to the brain. In this case, it occurred when Garraway became unconscious and stopped breathing. In a cross-examination, defense attorney Ray LaFest brought some good points out of the report. He claimed there were three different causes that could have factored into Garraway's death. The first was the amount of alcohol in Garraway's system. According to her report, Dr. Flores confirmed that Garraway had blood alcohol content of more than four times the legal limit. The doctor went on to say, this may not have been a lethal dose for Garraway, but a lethal dose of alcohol is from 0.4 to 0.7%. The second factor LaFest presented was that along with the alcohol, Garraway also had narcotics in his system. Dr. Flores confirmed that cocaine was also present in Garraway's system at the hospital. 10 days after his death, a post-mortem toxicology report, however, the cocaine was gone. This means it had been recently used prior to his death. The third factor LaFest used was the way he got to the hospital. We told you during initial reports that Garraway was taken to the hospital via personal car. LaFest alleged that if an ambulance had gotten there to assist Garraway, it could have increased his chances of survival. Dr. Flores disagreed by telling the attorney that every minute you stop breathing decreases chances of survival by 10%. She claimed either way, his chances of surviving was slim. The trial will continue throughout the day and will resume at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday. And now our next report, Park 2400 murder victim and attacker celebrated with round of shots, by Matt Tramiel, published March 8th. Wednesday morning, the Part 2400 murder trial continued with testimonies from the ER doctor, the Shannon security supervisor, and the waitress who served the group alcohol that fatal night. The most interesting of the three was the testimony from the waitress, Desiree Johnson. She is no longer a bartender at the Penny Tap House since its ownership change and rebrand to the Penny Bar and Grill. However, Johnson told the court that she now works for Shenanigan Sports Bar, but did work at the Penny Tap House on June 18th and 19th, 2021. She told the court that she was serving a group of about six people, three males for sure, but could have been two or three females. On the stand and under oath, she could not fully recall. That night, the bartender claimed, the group all seemed to be having a good time. She said they did not seem overly intoxicated and had only ordered two rounds of shots. Johnson did not see the crew leave the bar, but approximately 20 minutes later, she heard a group of military patrons talking about a real bad fight that had taken place outside. She said she left her station behind the bar and went outside. Once outside, Johnson said she witnessed a man in a blood-stained white shirt put a man in a car, tell the driver, go, go, go. Then he hopped into another truck and drove out of the parking lot. She said after the apparent victim and party departed, she discovered the pool of blood, the ring that had been mentioned all week long, and a gold watch. Johnson said that she picked up the watch and took it inside. Believing the gold watch was valuable, she claimed that she didn't want it to go missing if the victim came back to retrieve it. However, once police arrived, Johnson gave officers the watch. Defense attorney Ray LaFest showed Johnson footage of video surveillance of the inside of the bar that night. In the video, it showed the defendant, Jose Trevino, and the victim, Jason Garavay, and Garavay's brother, Eddie Charavia, all drinking at the table. At some point, things turned heated between Garavay and Trevino. In the video, Garavay was forced to be held back by his girlfriend. Then the group got up from their seats and left the bar through the front door. The defense asked who seemed to be the aggressor in the situation. Her response was both. Despite that, under further questioning from LaFest, Johnson ended up admitting that someone being held back was likely the aggressor. In rebuttal, the state asked Johnson if she had actually seen or heard the conversation in person. The video footage had no audio. Her answer was no. And then our next article, Part 2400 Murder Victim's Girlfriend Threatened, Don't Snitch, by Matt Tramiel, published March 8th. The closest witness to the Part 2400 murder victim took the stand during the afternoon portion of the jury trial of the state versus Jose Joe Angel Trevino on Wednesday afternoon. San Angelo Live has reported on the entire trial this week and most recently reported that the cocktail waitress at the pub confirmed the victim and the suspect were together that night. Along with the victim, Jason Garavay, and the accused murderer, others were partying with the two the night at the bar. The rest of the group consisted of Garavay's brother, Roy Chavarria, his wife, Rita Chavarria, a friend of Trevino, and Garavay's girlfriend. Her name has been pulled from the article to help protect her identity. We'll get to why in a second. She started her testimony by explaining how she knew everyone. It starts with Garavay. She told the court that she had known Garavay for some time, but had only been dating him for a few months. She said that on the night of the murder, June 18, 2021, she and Garavay had visited his friend's house. This would later be identified as the home of Garavay. Once there, the girlfriend said she stayed in the car and applied makeup and talked to her mother on the phone. Garavay, however, went inside for about 10 minutes before returning to the car. The group then went to the Penny Tap House, 2412 College Hills. Garavay and his girl went in his red Corvette, while Trevino and his friend went in Trevino's black Avalanche. After they were seated inside the pub, Rita and Roy joined the party. The girlfriend said that at first everything was going good. The girls were hanging out at a booth while the boys were shooting pool. At one point, even Garavay bought a beer for Trevino and gave it to his girlfriend, instructing her to give the beer to Joe Angel. After 2 hours and two shots later at the bar, though, things went south. Unfortunately, no witnesses knew why the escalation grew. Trevino and Garavay were butting heads, said the girlfriend, but they were only whispering things to each other. Finally, the argument got to the point where the two wanted to go fight outside. The girlfriend tried to stop it, but on the stand, she said nothing was going to stop him. At one point, the surveillance video backs up the girlfriend's testimony. The security camera video shows Garavay push her out of the way to get out of the pub. Once outside, Roy told Garavay's girlfriend to get into the car. This was in hope of ending the escalation. Moments later, the girlfriend is seen on video pulling up the car and Garavay got in. Unfortunately for the girl, she was not able to get him to stay in the car. This is where Garavay would make his final stand. After the fight happened, Roy and Rita loaded up Garavay's nearly lifeless body into the car. The girlfriend suspected the situation was serious as Garavay was not responding, but instead she said it sounded like he was snoring. She rushed him to the hospital, running all the red lights on College Hills, Beauregard, and Harris. Once she arrived at the hospital, she immediately went inside to find help. Seconds later, Rita and Roy showed up at the Shannon ER. While at the hospital, the girlfriend claims she was cornered by Rita. During the moment, which was caught on Shannon's surveillance video, Rita grabbed the girl by the face. The girlfriend testified that Rita told her that she better not talk to police or tell them that she knew anything. This scared the girl because of the first time she had met the Chavarrias. The first time the two had met was at a barbecue at Chavarria's home. There, Roy and Jason shared gruesome stories about things they had done to other people. No details were given in court, besides that they did bad things to people. A criminal record search shows a number of aggravated crimes, including aggravated assault, robbery, and kidnapping for Chavarria. The girlfriend said that even today she worries about the situation. In fact, the jury was dismissed briefly, so the DA, judge, and defense could console the girlfriend and encourage her to testify. All you have to do is tell the truth, 119th DA John Best told her. Despite her fear, after the jury returned, the girlfriend was courageous enough to testify. And that gets us caught all the way up to date to this point in that trial and is our final story on that crime. City Seeking Input on Accessibility to Recreation and Council Meetings by Yantis Green, published March 8th. The City of San Angelo will host a town hall meeting to gather input on accessibility to city facilities, programs, and services as related to the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. The meeting will be held from 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday, March 21st, in the council chambers at the McNeese Convention Center, 501 Rio Concho Drive. The meeting will be centered around two topics, the audio and visual components in the council chambers, as well as parks and recreation programming and services. The city will be updating the audio and visual components in the council chambers to better record and broadcast meetings. During the town hall meeting, staff will share the plans for the room and seek input from the public about the project, keeping in mind how best to accommodate people with disabilities. Also covered in the meeting will be the accessibility of parks and recreation programming and services. Staff will provide information about current programs and services, then seek public feedback for suggestions and comments on improvements that can be made to make the programming more accessible for all citizens. Questions and comments may be submitted ahead of the meeting by emailing info@cosatx.us and including ADA comment in the subject line. City staff will also monitor emails and comments on the YouTube live stream during the meeting. Sessions on other aspects of city programs and services will be held at a later date. For more information or to request accommodation for the meeting, visit cosatx.us/ADA. Accused gunman sentenced for North Bell Street shooting by James Belligny, published March 7th. A San Angelo man took a plea deal in court today and was sentenced to 30 years in prison. Jason Michael Lujan, 32, was sentenced to 30 years in prison today after being charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. According to court documents, on July 7th, 2021, San Angelo police responded to the 300 block of North Bell Street for a shooting that had occurred. Investigators on scene learned there were multiple witnesses to the shooting, and both victims were transported to Shannon Medical Center. The investigator went to check on the victim and learned that one had gunshot wounds to his shoulder and leg and was on a breathing tube, but was expected to survive. The other victim was shot in the arm and was flown to University Medical Center in Lubbock via helicopter, but had a moment to speak. One victim stated that a woman had come over to his house and brought two others with her that he did not know. One of these individuals, identified as Lujan, produced a handgun and shot the two victims. The day of the shooting, another officer, who was with the anti-gang unit, stopped a vehicle that may be involved with the shooting near the 800 block of Shiloh Street and detained three individuals, one of them being Lujan. The investigator conducted a Mirandized interview with Lujan, but never gave a reason for going to the location where the shooting took place. Lujan did state to the investigator that someone inside the residence came outside and punched and scratched one of the women in the face. Lujan said to this person to fight him instead of the woman when this individual put a hand behind his back. Lujan thought this person was going to produce a gun, so he pulled out his gun and opened fire. Lujan said that he then shot the other individual who came out of the house because he was approaching him as he was shooting the first individual. At the residence, investigators observed two large pools of blood and believed that the two victims went into the house after the shooting. No firearms were located in the area, in the residence, or on the two victims. In exchange for a guilty plea, Lujan was sentenced to 30 years in prison on 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Clearview Drive extension underway into new subdivision by Yantas Green, published March 7th. Developers of that new enclave at Twin Oaks Subdivision in southwest San Angelo are in the process of extending Clearview Drive in preparation for building new houses. There are currently 8 houses in the new addition for sale on the extension of Silver Spur and also facing Canyon Rim. Clearview will be the 2nd street in the new addition. According to the West Texas Land Guys website, the enclave at Twin Oaks will be located just south of Loop 306 on Grandview Drive and Canyon Rim Drive. The streets will include extensions to Royal Oak Drive, Grandview Drive, Clearview Drive, Silver Spur Drive, and Coral Way. The West Texas Land Guys consists of San Angelo's Eric Von Rosenberg, along with Lubbock builders Robert Wood, Trey Strong, and Kendall Cox. To the west of this new subdivision, Sierra Vista Builders has a development and is also clearing land to build single-family residential homes. These two builds will boost the San Angelo housing economy as the enclave alone will add over 100 new homes to the area. San Angelo police say dangerous couple arrested on drug and theft charges by Yantas Green, published March 9th. The San Angelo Police Department anti-crime units arrested 2 individuals on drug and theft charges after a surveillance program at a San Angelo hotel Wednesday. Members of the SAPD anti-crimes unit conducted surveillance at a local hotel on 2 wanted subjects Wednesday. 36-year-old Marcario Perales and 41-year-old Christina Irusti As officers were conducting surveillance, they observed Perales and Uriste to be loading items from a vehicle to a U-Haul trailer. Officers approached Uriste and Perales to take them into custody for their outstanding warrants. During the investigation, Perales was found to be in possession of a quantity of suspected cocaine. Officers also located a revolver inside the vehicle within plain view. Officers developed probable cause for the vehicle and the U-Haul trailer and were able to link items inside connected to a burglary of habitation in the 2800 block of Southland that had not yet been reported stolen. It was learned that during the report of the burglary of a habitation, a 2022 Ford Bronco was also taken. The owner was able to locate the vehicle by GPS, and it was recovered in the 3800 block of Arden Road. Officers were able to retrieve the majority of the stolen property to the rightful owner. Macario Perales and Christina Uriste were both transported to the Tom Green County Jail. Perales was charged with manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance, PG1, between 4 grams and 200 grams. Possession of a controlled substance, PG11B, less than 1 gram, and a U.S. Marshal hold. Uriste was arrested for credit card or debit card abuse, possession of marijuana less than 2 ounces, possession of a controlled substance, PG11B, less than 1 gram, possession or delivery of drug paraphernalia, and contempt of court. This case is a great example of teamwork and communication with the patrol division, K-9, anti-crime unit, gang unit, street crimes, and criminal investigations division. Additional charges are forthcoming and pending the outcome of this ongoing investigation. Solar farm brush burning causing headaches for Buffalo Heights residents, by Yantis Green, published March 8th. Residents of the Buffalo Heights subdivision west of San Angelo, near the San Angelo State Park, have been inundated by smoke from brush fires the new solar farm is building near their property and have approached Tom Green County Precinct 3 Commissioner Rick Bacon about the issue. Commissioner Bacon on Tuesday released the following information. Residents and landowners in Buffalo Heights, K&A subdivisions, and others in the FM 2288 area, please be advised that Kiewit's Solar Installation has hired a TDA-licensed commercial burn manager to oversee the safe execution of the continued burning of the woody debris being cleared for the solar installation on this private property. Many policy changes come with the addition of the commercial burn manager, with increased buffering applied to any burn proximity to houses and where no burn days will occur unless the forecast is for wind directions which do not disturb your neighborhoods. We are sorry for any inconvenience or nuisance the smoke has caused previously, and we are confident that working with NOAA, we can evacuate the smoke more safely. Fire is a natural process and the optimum choice for removing biomass naturally. Conservation Fire Team, area code 512-332-6375, email bet@wcc.net. The Tom Green County Commissioner's Court enacted a burn ban 2 weeks ago. Commissioner Bacon also shared the following. Please let me clarify some things regarding the solar farm and the county. The county does not have any authority over the construction of the solar farm. An individual commissioner does not have the authority to allow or not allow burning during a burn ban. We issue the order and the sheriff has to enforce it. Please call the sheriff office dispatch for violations of the burn ban. I have tried to convince the solar farm contractors to be good neighbors and mulch as much as possible. However, if the proper paperwork is filed, they will be allowed to burn during a burn ban. Regardless of whether a burn ban is in effect, there are certain guidelines, wind direction and speed, they are required to follow when burning. TCEQ was on site 3 times last week and did not issue any citations. The state legislature is very clear on county involvement with private property owners, and that is to stay out of their business. We can voice concerns for you, but as long as the solar farm contractors are in compliance with state statutes, there is nothing we can do. Below is the contact information Apex gave me late last Friday for addressing any concerns. Please contact them directly. People may get in touch with our Apex team to ensure their concerns receive follow-up by filling out a form on our website or using the contact information below. info@angelosolar.com. Phone 325-420-1858. San Angelo City Council approves millions for NAS-worthy sewer project by Yantis Green, published March 7th. San Angelo City Council members Tuesday approved issuing $44 million in bonds to complete the NAS-worthy sewer line project during their regular meeting. The council voted 7-0 to approve the bonds. As we reported earlier, the sewer capacity will increase from 500,000 gallons to 2.5 million gallons per day. That would be adequate to accommodate any development around the lake and at the airport. The infrastructure will include a trunk main, a main artery, that eventually could serve other areas that currently must rely on septic systems. This will also provide the framework to eventually eliminate 6-8 lift stations. Competitive sealed proposals for rebidding the South Concho A lift station and Lake Nasworthy wastewater system improvements were opened on March 3, 2023. The council awarded the following items pertaining to the Lake Nasworthy wastewater system improvements project and authorized the city manager to negotiate and execute all related documents. 1. RFP WU0323 rebid South Concho A lift station to Austin Engineering Company Incorporated in the amount of $5,330,900 based upon scoring criteria as set forth in the competitive sealed proposal procurement method. 2. RFB WU0423 rebid Lake Nasworthy wastewater system improvements to McKee Utility Contractors Incorporated for the base bid and alternate bid item A in the amount of $25,999,100 based upon the scoring criteria as set forth in the competitive sealed proposal procurement method. 3. Task Order 3 in the amount of $1,498,906 for construction phase services and resident project representative services for Lake Nasworthy wastewater system improvements to CDM Smith Incorporated. 4. Amend the fiscal year 2022-23 to budget for debt issuance in the amount of $44,233,920. In other business, the council approved negotiating a long-term lease with Angelo State University for the Bly Arena next to San Angelo Coliseum. According to the agenda, the council approved negotiating an agreement between the City of San Angelo and Angelo State University for a long-term lease of the Bly area and authorized the city manager to negotiate and execute all related documents. Angelo State University is interested in a 10-year lease with the City of San Angelo for the Bly Arena located at 160 East 43rd Street. Angelo State University plans to start their rodeo program during the 2023 fall semester. The arena would provide a practice venue for students as well as a faculty to board their horses. ASU also plans to make significant improvements to the Bly Arena by restoring the area, the arena, and the property. The investment ASU will make in the Bly Arena will benefit not only the ASU rodeo program, but the San Angelo community and surrounding areas. We are seeking council's approval of an agreement to be made between the City of San Angelo and ASU for a long-term lease and authorizing the city manager to negotiate and execute all related documents. ASU is expected to have a rodeo team up and running by the fall semester of 2023. San Angelo woman arrested for alleged tryst with juvenile. by James Beligny. A San Angelo woman has been arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting a child after getting drunk and blacking out 2 years ago. According to court documents, on February 21st, 2023, an investigator interviewed the child victim, who advised on Sunday, October 17th, 2021, the defendant, Soka Loth, picked him up outside his residence around 11 p.m. Then, the child states that Loth drove to an unknown location several blocks away and parked the vehicle. There, the child alleges that Loth performed a sexual act on him before telling the victim to get into the back seat, where she assaulted him again. After that, the victim stated Loth drove him home. On February 21st, 2023, the investigator observed Snapchat messages between Loth and the victim that were from October 17, 2021. At around 8:30 p.m., Loth messages the victim, "I'll pick you up. Let's F, F, L-M-A-O. I'll message you when you need to come out." On February 22, 2023, Loth was interviewed and told authorities her relationship with the child was like a son or brother, and all she remembered was getting drunk and blacking out. Loth also denied sexually assaulting the child. Loth was arrested and booked into the Tom Green County Detention Facility on March 6, 2023, for sexual assault of a child, and was released the same day on a $75,000 bond. San Angelo man sent to prison for decades in child assault plea deal. A San Angelo man has taken a plea deal for continuous sexual abuse of a child under the age of 14, and he will be going to prison for decades. According to court documents, an 11-year-old child made an outcry of sexual abuse by 62-year-old Raymundo Luna. The victim said in a forensic interview that on or about January 5th, 2020 through November 29th, 2020, while at a residence on the 200 block of North Campus Boulevard, Luna had sexually assaulted the child on more than two occasions during a period that was 30 or more days in duration. Investigators then spoke with Luna, who said that during those dates, he sexually assaulted the 11-year-old child at a residence on the 200 block of North Campus Boulevard on more than two occasions. Luna was arrested and booked into the Tom Green County Detention Facility on May 14, 2022, and had a $250,000 bond. In exchange for the guilty plea, Luna was sentenced to 30 years in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for the continued sexual abuse of a child younger than the age of 14. Women Injured in Crash at Dangerous Intersection by Antis Green, published March 6th. Two elderly women were injured in a Monday morning crash at the dangerous intersection of 6th Street and North Bryant in San Angelo. According to San Angelo police at the scene, a black Nissan passenger car, occupied by two elderly women, was traveling northbound on North Bryant. A tan GMC pickup was southbound on Bryant, attempting to turn left onto 6th Street. The driver of the GMC pulled into the path of the Nissan, causing the crash. Both women in the Nissan suffered significant injuries and were transported to Shannon Medical Center by ambulance. The driver of the pickup was not injured and refused treatment at the scene. According to the investigating officer, the driver of the pickup will be cited for failure to yield the right-of-way. Graphic affidavit. Suspect brutally assaulted San Angelo woman. A San Angelo man has been arrested and charged with aggravated sexual assault for a monstrous sexual attack on a woman in September. According to court documents, on September 13, 2022, patrol units with the San Angelo Police Department were dispatched to a reported sexual assault. Officers arrived and secured the scene and were briefed by the victim that her property was in a backyard of a residence. Investigators conducted a short interview with the victim before she went to Shannon Medical Center for a sexual assault exam. The investigator went to the 100 block of East 25th Street, where officers say the victim's property was located in the backyard on the ground. An officer met with a woman who gave them verbal consent to collecting the victim's property and a wooden board that was possibly used in the assault. On September 14, 2022, investigators conducted a follow-up interview with the victim. According to the victim, the defendant, identified as Jose Jaime Perez Hernandez, had messaged her on social media. Hernandez and the victim began talking, and they had hung out a few times. The woman said she met Hernandez at a local convenience store, and she rode with him to his residence. Hernandez parked in the backyard. Then the victim began to ignore Hernandez. He exited the vehicle, opened the passenger door, and slapped the victim across the face. Hernandez then allegedly pulled the victim out of the truck by her hair and told her that this is where she was going to die. The victim said Hernandez wanted to run over her head with his truck. Then she advised Hernandez, told her to take off her jewelry and watch, or he would assault her again. Then Hernandez allegedly told her again she would die tonight. Then she was not going home, and she needed to tell everyone that she would not be home and that she loved him. Hernandez allegedly grabbed a board and told the victim to stand against the truck. Hernandez then struck the victim on the buttocks with the board. Investigators reviewed photos of injuries that were consistent with the victim's claims. Hernandez went through the victim's wallet, where the victim's property dropped to the ground. The victim stated Hernandez was angry, opened a beer, and began drinking it. The victim then claims Hernandez asked her, what if he broke the bottle and cut her throat with it? Then Hernandez told her to pull her pants down, which the victim did. Hernandez grabbed the victim's hair and threw her across the seat of the truck. The victim stated she told him no, and Hernandez told her he would do it before he beat her again. Hernandez pulled his pants down and sexually assaulted the victim. Later, the victim was able to grab her cell phone and fled the scene. Hernandez was arrested on March 2, 2023, and has a $125,000 bond. Hobbs, New Mexico woman lands Lunker at OHIV Monday. By Antis Green, published March 4th. Ballinger. The third legacy class fish from OHIV submitted Monday by an angler in 4 days. Michelda Criswell of Hobbs, New Mexico, landed her catch of a lifetime with a 14.08-pound Cher Lunker 646. Criswell is the first female angler of the 2023 Toyota Cher Lunker collection season to reel in a legacy class Lunker. This also marks the second year in a row that a female angler has donated their fish to the Cher Lunker program. Kelly Renfro of Lufkin was the first since 2018 to catch a legacy class Lunker when she boated 13.27-pound Cher Lunker 628 on March 10, 2022 at Lake Nacogdoches. Criswell's catch boosted OHIV's season total to 12. Matching the lake's output from the 2021 and 2022 seasons. Lake Allen Henry and Nacogdoches are the other two water bodies with legacy class entries this year. Their contributions put the overall tally at 14 heading into the final month of the collection season. It has been great to see the momentum of legacy Lunkers continue through the month of February, said Natalie Goldstrom, Toyota Cher Lunker Program Coordinator. It has been impressive to see 12 legacy class Lunkers produced from OHIV in just 2 months. It will be exciting to see how many are produced during the final month of the collection period. Criswell used to fish offshore at Cabo San Lucas, but has only had her own bass boat for 3 years. She began using her husband's 16-foot John boat to troll Oak Creek Reservoir for fish a few years ago where they owned some property. I just love and have been fascinated with fishing my whole life, said Criswell. I caught white bass, catfish, and crappie, and then I started catching largemouth bass. I began getting more interested in largemouth bass, and before I knew it, I was standing in the boat, drifting and casting for bass. Bob Dennis was my boat mechanic, and he really taught me how to bass fish. 4 years ago, on my birthday, he gave me some spinner baits and told me to learn how to use a bait caster. Once I did, he took me fishing and taught me old school, how to read the land, how to visualize, and I started catching bass. So I went and got a bass boat. Chriswell drives to Texas every Friday to fish for the weekend. Last weekend, she participated in her first bass tournament and won it, along with catching the biggest bass of the tournament. Chriswell read about the ShareLunker program last year and made a goal to be a part of it. Fast forward to Monday, when her dream of catching a ShareLunker became a reality. I went out fishing with Brady Stanford, and the wind was horrible to start out, said Chriswell. We had to fish according to the weather, so I was using a deep dive crankbait and caught a 7-pound fish. There were some other big ones, and I tried at different things, but they just wouldn't react. Chriswell said they weren't ready to give up, so they went back to a few spots. I was using an A-rig and initially threw and missed the fish, who was by herself in 15 to 20 feet of water, said Chriswell. I let Brady give it a try, and the fish didn't take to his bait either. However, I cast again, and she attacked it. I did everything in my power not to scream with excitement. Once the fish was in the boat, Chriswell made the call to the ShareLunker program and headed to Concho to get the official weight for entry into the program. My experience with the program was phenomenal, said Chriswell. I learned a lot from Brady and, of course, the TPWD staff on how to take care of the fish. TPWD does an excellent job. I know this fish is going to spa heaven. It was really neat to see the whole process firsthand. I hope this is encourages anybody to go out and try to chase their dream, because my goal last year was to catch a ShareLunker, and I did it. I've had a wonderful support from many people, and my husband was on the journey. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be a part of this. Since January 2021, OH Ivy has been on an unprecedented run, thanks to a combined total of 36 legacy fish. ShareLunker 644 has been determined to be a recapture from previous seasons. Some genetics data are still being analyzed. During the first 3 months of the season, January through March, anglers who reel in a 13-plus pound bass can loan it to TPWD for the ShareLunker Selective Breeding and Stocking Program. These anglers can call the ShareLunker hotline at 903-681-0550 to report their catch 24/7 through March 31st. Anglers who catch and donate a 13-plus pound lunker earn legacy class status, a catch kit filled with merchandise, a 13-plus pound legacy decal for their vehicle or boat, VIP access to the Toyota ShareLunker annual awards event, and a high-quality replica mount of their lunker from Lake Fork Taxidermy. These anglers will also receive prizes into two separate contests, a legacy class drawing and the year-end grand prize drawing. First place in either wins a $5,000 Bass Pro Shops shopping spree and a resident or non-resident annual fishing license. The year-round Toyota ShareLunker program offers four levels of participation for catching bass over 8 pounds or 24 inches in Texas. In addition to legacy class, 13 plus pounds between January and March, ShareLunker entry classes include the Lunker class, 8 plus pounds, Elite class, 10 plus pounds, and Legend class, 13 plus pounds from April to December. Anglers who enter data for any lunker they catch, greater than 8 pounds or 24 inches, during the calendar year 2023 also receive a catch kit, a decal for their vehicle or boat, and an entry into the year-end grand prize drawing to win a $5,000 Bass Pro Shops shopping spree and annual fishing license. Once a lunker is reeled in, anglers need to enter the catch data on the Toyota ShareLunker mobile app, available for free from the App Store, Apple App Store, and Google Play, or on the Toyota Share Lunker online app at texassharelunker.com. In addition to basic catch information, anglers can also provide a DNA scale sample from their lunker bass to TPWD researchers for genetic analysis. A new procedure is in effect for the 2023 season. Legend class share lunkers no longer need to be weighted on a certified scale for entry. Anglers must include a photo of their lunker on a digital scale to qualify for Legend class. The Toyota Share Lunker program is made possible in part by the generous sponsorship of Toyota. Toyota is a longtime supporter of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation and TPWD, providing major funding for a wide variety of fisheries, state parks, and wildlife projects. Prize donors such as Bass Pro Shops, Lake Fork Taxidermy, American Fishing Tackle Company, Stanley Jigs, and Sixth Sense Fishing provide additional support for this program. San Angelo VFW Hall gets a facelift by Ryan Chadwick, published March 3rd. On Friday, March 3rd, the local Home Depot volunteers painted and reconditioned the San Angelo VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, post 1815. They partnered with Adame A-Plus Construction to renovate and remodel the local Veterans of Foreign Wars building located at 125 South Browning Street. The project will likely run through the weekend as they still have much to do. They plan on several painting projects, both inside and outside the building, including the patio, storage buildings, and the rear of the main building. They also plan to install cameras, lighting, and flooring. These renovations will go a long way to improving a building that's been around since the 1950s. The Home Depot Foundation works to improve the homes and lives of U.S. veterans, train skilled tradespeople to fill the labor gap, and support communities impacted by natural disasters. Since 2011, the foundation has invested more than $400 million in veteran causes and improved more than 50,000 veteran homes and facilities. The foundation has pledged to invest $500 million in veteran causes by 2025 and $50 million in training the next generation of skilled tradespeople through the Path to Pro program. The Veterans of Foreign Wars in the United States is a nonprofit veteran service organization comprised of eligible veterans and military service members from the active, guard, and reserve forces. We have many programs and services that work to support veterans, service members, and their families, as well as communities worldwide. The San Angelo VFW provides a place for veterans and their families to spend time, relax, and spend time with each other. They have several facilities available to veterans, such as an entire game room, pool tables, a ping pong table, and three dartboard stations, two big screen TVs in a lounge area with multiple sofas, a bar area, and a dance parlor capable of hosting live music and events. Most notably, the VFW features a museum filled with regalia from World War I to the Persian Gulf, all donated by members of the VFW. Here is some schedules of events for March. March 11th, Saturday, Old Hat Band, 7 to 11 p.m., $15. March 18th, Saturday, Joe Trevino Band, 7 to 11 p.m., $15. March 25th, Saturday, Exit 277 Band, 7 to 11 p.m., $15. All proceeds go to the VFW. One of San Angelo's favorite boutiques has moved downtown. By Matt Trammell, published March 3rd. One of San Angelo's favorite boutiques has moved out of their location on Johnson and moved into a spot in downtown San Angelo. As of March 1st, Grigsby's Boutique will be located at 59 North Chadburn. This is a change from their original spot at 2635 Johnson Street. According to their owners, the move happened after decisions to move closer to busy downtown. Grigsby's is a local favorite and, in fact, has been listed as one of the best boutiques in the state of Texas. Grigsby's offers a number of items, including women's clothing, accessories, and more. They are one of the only authorized Kendra Scott dealers in town. Grigsby's Boutique is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.